You're listening to DTFHN for August 21st, 2026. I'm your open sourced against my will host, Jack Haxman. We are your daily tech feed for Hacker News. A website W section is a peer review board that nobody applied to. Today is about what survives when the thing on top of it falls over, and who gets to hold the key. Crack the case open. No commas on this one yet, which is its own kind of data point. A new frontier vision model ships and the thread is empty. The documentation speaks for itself, so let's read it closely. DeepSeek v non-flash vision expects images alongside text. JPEG, PNG, GIF, WebP. Three ways to hand it a picture. Base64, inline, a public URL. Or a file uploaded once through the file's API and reference by ID. Inline requests cap at 48 MB. A downloaded image caps at 32. A file uploaded ahead of time gets 64. There's a detail parameter. Low downscales to 512 by 512 and costs less. Original keeps what you gave it. Now the part worth sitting with. Every example in that documentation imports the OpenAI Python client. The base URL is swapped api.deepseek.com and everything else is identical. Same content block array, same image underscore URL object, same file underscore ID shape. In 1841, Joseph Whitworth proposed that screw threads in Britain should have a standard angle and a standard pitch. Before that, every workshop cut its own. A bolt from Manchester would not thread into a nut from Birmingham, and if your machine broke, you went back to the shop that built it. Whitworth's proposal was not an invention. It was a measurement of what most good shops were already doing, written down so everyone could do it. Within 30 years, British industry ran on interchangeable parts, and no single firm owned the thread. The chat completions format is a screw thread. OpenAI cut it. DeepSeek adopted it. Not under license, not through partnership, just by implementing the same shape. And once two vendors accept the same bulk pattern, the pattern stops belonging to either of them. It becomes infrastructure, which means the switching cost for a developer running vision workloads is now one string, one base URL. The model behind it is a different architecture, trained by a different team, on a different continent, priced differently. That's the whole story. The capability is not the moat. The interface was supposed to be the moat, and the interface got standardized by everyone else adopting it faster than anyone could defend it. The word EXP is still in the model name, experimental, which tells you they shipped it anyway and let people find the edges in production. The tools exist. Point your client somewhere else and see what happens. Speaking of models finding their edges in production. Okay, no. Let's talk about something that shipped decades ago and hid a secret nobody found until now. Story 2. 1997. John Carmack posts the Doom source code to an FTP server. Almost 30 years later, Doom runs on pregnancy tests, oscilloscopes, and a lawnmower's dashboard, because once the engine was in the open, keeping it alive stopped being any one company's problem. 10 years before that, MicroProse shipped Sid Meier's Pirates and took a completely different fork. Start with the craft, because the craft is genuinely remarkable. Meier was building in a window where nobody had agreed what a game was yet. No conventions to lean on, no conventions to fight, so he modeled the Spanish Main as a clockwork machine. Silver comes out of the ground at Potosí, travels by mule train to Panama, gets loaded onto ships, moves port to port along Gran Colombia, and eventually the treasure fleet leaves for Spain heavy with all of it. That economy runs whether you're watching or not. You're a parasite on a working simulation. And the sword fighting. Thrust for speed, slash for damage. Parry, aimed high or middle or low. All of it mapped onto an 8-direction Commodore 64 joystick. It's indefensible by modern standards and completely unlike anything since. The 2004 remake sanded it down and found a rhythm game underneath. That's what happens when a mechanic comes from Errol Flynn movies instead of from other games. The designer Nick Tringali described it as unstuck in genre. Not open world, not RPG, not economic strategy. The wind always blows east. Beat a rival captain in a duel, and you win the naval battle outright. Those aren't bugs in the abstraction. They're the abstraction. Now the due diligence question. Where is it? The code is somewhere inside a rights chain that runs Microprose to Spectrum Holobyte to Hasbro to Infogrames to Atari to whoever holds the paper this quarter. Nobody at any of those companies made those decisions about the wind. The 1993 Gold Remaster, the 2004 Rebuild, the ports. Each one exists at the pleasure of a spreadsheet, and a commenter on this thread points out the obvious thing. Some games spawn entire genres, and some brilliant games never get a worthy successor. Doom got 1,000 children because you could read it. The people who love this game are running it in emulators from disk images that survived by being copied. That copying is the only reason we're still talking about it. Architecture decides what gets to be 40 years old. Moving on! 4 years is a long time to keep a system at arm's length. I've built things where the development environment and the production environment quietly drifted apart, and the failure mode is never dramatic. It's slow. You stop testing the thing you can't run locally. You start reasoning about it from logs. The Encore team hit that in a specific, physical way. Firecracker needs /dev/kbellbell. No Mac has one, and most of their engineers work on Macs. So the build system lived in a data center. Each engineer got a personal user account on one shared box reachable over Tailscale, with a hard-coded port number in a get-ignored config file so nobody collided with anybody else. The images were the hard part. Firecracker boots a block device. Docker makes layers. So the pipeline was, Docker save on your laptop, rsync the tarball across the country. Then, SSH into the shared machine and pipe a shell function into a login shell on the far end, which re-extracted every layer in manifest order. Deleted whiteout markers with find because tar won't apply them. Wrote a hard-coded resolve.conf because the VM had no DNS. Pulled environment variables out with JQ. And finally, ran Macca's quashets. Then a third, SSH, to kill your container and start the replacement. That worked. For 4 years, that worked. And here's the question nobody in this thread wants to sit with. How much good engineering never happens because the loop is too slow to attempt it? They fixed it. They built Crackling. One micro VM API that drives Firecracker on Linux and Apple's Hypervisor framework on Mac OS, booting the same images on both, which meant rebuilding most of the Linux image toolchain to run natively on a Mac. That's not a weekend. That's someone deciding the friction was the actual product problem. The Firecracker maintainers had a working proof of concept for Apple's virtualization framework offered to them. They turned it down. No macOS support plan. That's their call to make. But this is exactly why the source being open matters more than the roadmap being generous. Encore didn't need permission. They didn't need the maintainers to prioritize their laptops. They could read the code, understand what the hypervisor interface actually required, and build the parallel path themselves. A commenter notes the real bottleneck is Hypervisor Framework's developer experience and virtual device parity. Probably true. Someone will fix that too. Now something completely different, Pause small native web tricks that take 5 minutes to learn and stick with you forever. Story 4. What does a website owe you when it teaches you something? HTML cat is a collection of post-it cards, each one pairing a native web platform feature with a snippet of code and the caveat that bites you. Details and summary elements. The popover attribute. Dialogue. Things the browser already does that most of us reach for a library to accomplish anyway. Strip this down to first principles. What's the actual problem HTML cat is solving? The web platform has been quietly absorbing functionality for a decade. Accordions, modals, tooltips, lazy loading, scroll snippet. All of it shipped natively while the JavaScript ecosystem kept building the same components on top. The knowledge gap isn't capability, it's discoverability. Nobody sends out a memo when the platform grows a new feature. And the mental model most developers carry is a snapshot from whenever they last learned HTML deeply. So the constraint here isn't technical, it's attention. And a post-it card is an interesting response to that. Deliberately small, one idea, no tutorial scaffolding. That's a real design position. The commenters push back, and they're not wrong. The site says it pairs each feature with a small example, and what you actually get is code without a rendered result. If the point is that the browser already does this, show the browser doing it. That's the entire argument, and it's sitting one iframe away. Another commenter notes, these aren't really tricks so much as features you'd find in the MDN docs with more depth than actual demos. Also, fair. But the appreciation I have here is for the format instinct. MDN is exhaustive and therefore unbrawlable. You go to MDN with a question. You can't go to MDN to find out what you don't know. A wall of small cards is genuinely a different retrieval mechanism. Pattern recognition instead of search. That's craft, even if the execution is a first draft. And someone in the thread just says, please don't hide scroll bars. A site about respecting native platform behavior. Overriding a native platform behavior. The irony is doing its own work. I don't need to add to it. The whole thing is a static site. Somebody noticed a gap between what browsers can do and what developers remember they can do, and built a small thing to close it. That's the loop working exactly as it should. Ship it, take the feedback, add the live examples. The tools exist. That static site was one person closing a small gap. Story 5 is what happens when a very large gap opened at once. So August 17 outage. Let me make the case for GitHub here, and I want to make it honestly. Nobody else could have absorbed this. Monthly commits went from 1.4 billion in April to 2.9 billion in August. That is a doubling in 4 months. GitHub answered it with 3 million CPU cores, 120 petabytes of fast storage, and a migration that moved Azure from 12% of platform load to 58%. Centralization is what made that possible. A federation of small hosts would have simply fallen over. Scale requires a single throat to choke. And GitHub is choking gracefully and publishing the postmortem. That is the argument. And it is a real argument. It fails on one detail. Git did not go down on August 17th. Git cannot go down. Linus Torvalds designed it in 2005 specifically so that every clone is a complete repository. The entire history on your disk right now. What went down was authentication. Actions, pull requests, issues, and Copilot. Every one of those is a proprietary layer bolted on top of a distributed system. And every one of them reintroduced the single point of failure that Git was built to eliminate. The 7 hours and 47 minutes were not a failure of version control. They were the bill for the parts that aren't version control. The failure mode is old. January 15, 1990. AT&T's long-distance network collapsed for 9 hours because a switch in New York rebooted, told its neighbors, and the recovery message itself crashed the neighbors, which then told their neighbors. 114 switches taking each other down with the message meant to signal recovery. GitHub's Copilot clients did the same thing in miniature. Errors triggered a client retry loop that increased traffic during recovery, and the traffic had to be mitigated before service could be restored. 35 years later, the fixes still retry budgets and variable timeouts. We keep relearning that eager clients are a load-bearing part of your capacity model. The engineers who spent that day rerouting traffic and isolating infrastructure did excellent work under real pressure, and they deserve to be read generously. The interesting question is architectural, and it's the one they're already answering. Isolating critical systems. Removing shared dependencies. Read capacity that scales linearly with readers. Good instincts. The remaining gap is that the parts you can self-host survived the outage, and the parts you can't are the ones that didn't. Now let's lighten things up, because the next story is about writing style, and I have some apologies to make to my English teacher. I owe every English teacher I ever had an apology, and it took a naked man's butt to get there. The essay is about a property the author calls thickness. A thick work unfurls in response to attention. The more time you put in, the more it gives back. Thin work gives you everything on the first pass and nothing after. The problem is that thickness and accessibility trade against each other. Rewarding the careful reader usually means repelling the casual one. Nobody told him that. He was handed Moby Dick like it was self-explanatory and sent into a dark cave with no flashlight. The butt music is where this gets load-bearing. Hieronymus Bosch 500 years ago painted the Garden of Earthly Delights, and in the hell panel there's a man face down with musical notation printed across his backside. In 2012, a student named Amelia Hamrick transcribed it, recorded it, put it on her blog. It went everywhere. And then the author, researching this, finds three blog posts by a medieval music expert named Ian Pittman, who demonstrates she wasn't the first. People have been decoding that butt for decades, and the transcription depends on assumptions about medieval notation that reasonable experts dispute. Which is the point? The Easter egg had an Easter egg. He went into the cave and found a deeper chamber. Run us forward, where building systems whose entire economic proposition is compressing thick things into thin ones. Summarizes paper. Give me the takeaway. And the takeaway is real. It's the part visible from outside the cave, and often that's all you need. But the summary of Bosch is, weird medieval painting, lots of naked people. That summary is correct, and it contains zero of the value. The value was in Hamrick spending an afternoon squinting at a 500-year-old rear end, and in Pittman spending years on medieval notation. And in a third person finding both. The good news is architectural. Hamrick published to a blog. Pittman published to a blog. The chain of discovery held because each link was open, indexable, free to read. Nobody licensed the butt music. Nobody gated the notation scholarship. That's what led a random essayist trip over the deeper version while researching the shallow one. Thickness needs a flashlight. Open publishing is the flashlight. Nobody gated the notation scholarship, and nobody's gating this next one either. Story 7, the case against Atonis. Point 5 in the article is the one worth stopping on, not the syntax argument, not the hiring argument. Point 5, the CABI is the standard for interoperability. Read that carefully. C's moat isn't the language. It's a calling convention, a specification for how arguments get placed in registers and on the stack before a jump. Zig doesn't have to beat C at pointer arithmetic. It has to speak that convention fluently, and it does. So does Rust. So does Odin, D, Nim, and C3 itself. The language this author is building while writing the case against building it. Let me argue the other side. Suppose the author is right, and none of these ever displace C. Suppose in 2040, the kernel is still C, the embedded toolchain still assumes C, and every one of these projects is a footnote. Does that make them failures? Consider what actually happened in the 4 years since this was published. Zig's compiler can build C code. It ships as a drop-in cross-compiler that C developers use without writing a line of Zig. Rust landed in the Linux kernel. The pattern isn't replacement, it's absorption from the edges. New languages taking on the burden of interop rather than demanding the ecosystem come to them. That only works because the interface is open. The CABI is a published spec that anyone can implement. No license, no partner program, no certification. That single architectural fact is why a person can sit down alone, write a compiler, and have it talk to 40 years of accumulated software on day one. Now, imagine the counterfactual. Imagine the calling convention were proprietary. Owned, licensed, revocable. Every language on that list is still born. Zig doesn't exist. Rust in the kernel doesn't happen. The author's five objections collapse into one. You're not allowed. The commenter who said the value of C is the interop story got closest to it, then asked whether a modern language could replace C for that role. The question contains its own answer. What they're describing isn't a language they want. It's a public commons with a stable contract. The article treats the ABI as C's defensive advantage. It's the opposite. It's the reason C has competitors at all. An open interface is a door, and doors swing both ways. 50 years of infrastructure, and the load-bearing element is a document anyone can read. Now let's swing from the deepest layer of the stack all the way up to the browser. Story 8, HTML can do that. A shared name attribute turns a pile of details elements into an exclusive accordion. Open one, the others close. That's it. That's the whole feature. One word and behavior that 1,000 tutorials taught you to write with event listeners and class toggles just happens. Chris Brunell built this page in 1 hour during HTML day, cataloging the things the browser now does natively. Pop over with light dismiss and escape the close and no Z index wrangling. Because popovers render on the top layer where nothing can stack over them. Dialogue elements, opened and closed by buttons that simply point at them. Invoker, command. Command and command for. Where one button says show modal and another says request close. And neither of them is JavaScript. Data list. Native date pickers. The craft here deserves specificity. Light dismiss is not a small thing. Anyone who has written the click outside to close handler knows the graveyard of edge cases. Nested elements, focus traps. The mounders exclick distinction. The modal that eats your escape key. Standards people specified. That browser engineers implemented it across three rendering engines. And now it's an attribute. And Brunell did the honest thing, which is the part I keep coming back to. He updated the page the day before yesterday specifically to flag where browser implementations are severely lacking or completely fail accessibility needs. Not a victory lap. A working document with the failures marked. The comment thread does the same. Someone points out that Daedalus gives you no real contract. Users can type whatever they want into the field. Someone else wants ISO date format because the platform native picker follows the operating system language, not the page language, which quietly confuses people. Someone wants sortable tables natively and has clearly re-implemented them 12 times. Now, the bootstrapism angle. Every one of these features is a capability moved from the framework layer down into the substrate. The framework layer requires a build step, a package manager, a dependency tree, and a job that taught you all three. The substrate requires a text editor. When behavior lands in HTML, the floor rises for everyone standing on it. The kid with a text file, the person on a slow connection, the commenter still running no script in 2026, who says the modern web is getting harder to browse that way and hopes this changes it. The tools are getting simpler. That's the new. Build steps have their own story here. Because story 9 is what happens when a dependency tree gets one crate that runs code the moment you compile. The top comment isn't about the malware. It's about the erasure. Someone points out that GitHub needs something finer grained than pretending a repository never existed, because when the Drowndy account went dark, three repos and every issue, every commit, every piece of forensic history went with it. The malicious crate version vanished from crates.io too, with no marker left behind. A developer trying to figure out whether their build was poisoned on August 20th finds a 404 where the evidence should be. Here's the principle worth following all the way down. Cargo lets a crate ship a build script. Build.rs that runs arbitrary code on your machine at compile time. That's not a bug. It's the design, and it's genuinely useful for linking native libraries and generating code. But follow it to the end. If compiling is executing, then the advice we all give, read the code before you run it, is incoherent. You cannot read a dependency tree of 400 crates, and you cannot compile it to inspect it, because compiling it is running it. The principle collapses. There is no safe way to look. The payload proves the point precisely. Proc macro 1. Not proc macro 2. One character off, published under Dottolny instead of Dottolny, with David Tolny's name forged into the author's field. Its source directory was a real copy of proc macro 2. So build succeeded and nothing looked wrong. The build script assembled a server address out of base 64 fragments, fetched an architecture-specific binary over TLS while accepting any certificate, dropped it at /tmp/rust, set up and attached the process so the compiler wouldn't wait on it, and the delivery mechanism was the safety mechanism. The attacker yanked array ref versions, BOS 3.3.5 through 0.3. Cargo dutifully warned developers to update to a version that isn't yanked. There was exactly one. The person who filed the RustSec advisory got there by following the warning. 245 million downloads. It sits under Tiny Skia, under Winit, under most of the Rust GUI ecosystem. The answer isn't less packaging. The commenter who said Cargo desperately needs sandboxing for build scripts is right, and the sandbox build scripts proposal from 2024 is sitting there, unfinished. Compile time code execution is a capability. Capabilities get scoped. That work is engineering, it's tractable, and it's overdue. Moving on. In 1998, Netscape released the Navigator source code, not because openness was fashionable, because they lost, and opening the box was the only move left. What we got from that surrender was Mozilla, then Firefox, then Gecko, then the entire notion that a browser engine is public infrastructure. The lesson everyone took was about strategy. The lesson worth keeping is about inspection. Once the source was out, you could ask the system what it was and get an answer. Aux Alpha is the exact inverse, a reasoning model on OpenRouter, tuned for long horizon software engineering, agentic loops, multimodal context. The workloads where you hand a system your repository and walk away for 20 minutes and nobody will tell you who made it. OpenRouter says plainly that it routes requests and is not the developer, owner, or provider. The provider retains your prompts and completions and has stated they aren't used for training. Consider how a sommelier identifies a wine blind, no label. So, you work the evidence, acidity, tannin structure, what the fruit does on the finish. You triangulate origin from behavior. That's precisely what the commenters are doing. One reports it declines questions about Tiananmen Square while cheerfully producing electronic warfare instructions that Opus and Fable refuse outright. That's a refusal fingerprint. Alignment training leaves a terroir. The shape of what a model won't say tells you where it was fermented and under whose rules. Another commenter hit a concrete engineering failure, asked for a light and dark theme built on color mix, and had discarded the constraint entirely. The retention line is the sharpest one in the thread. Not used for training, but retained. Somebody asked the obvious follow-up. Retained for what, then? A stealth preview with no billing relationship is inference given away at cost. The compute is real. Something has to be on the other side of that ledger. The healthy response here is already happening, and it's a builder response. OpenCode is offering the same model behind a zero data retention agreement. That's the move. You don't get to inspect the weights, so you constrain the contract instead. Same instinct as sandboxing a build script. You can't audit the code, so you scope the capability. Test it. Benchmark it. Just know that anonymity is a property of the system, and it points in exactly one direction. There's. This has been your daily tech feed for Hacker News for August 21st, 2026. This podcast is entirely AI-generated. Scripts by Claude Sonic 4.7. Voice by Quen 3, TTS. Not affiliated with Hacker News or Y Combinator. Now go open something up and read it closely. We'll see you back here tomorrow.